So the big question is this: what would you do if money didn't matter? Say you had millions in your bank account, what would you focus on? Would you spend more time with your family, with your wife, with your kids, take family vacations? Would you pursue your gifts and talents and dreams, serve your local community, teach others, serve your church community? You see, if what you would do if money didn't matter is pursue your gifts and talents and dreams to serve others, then that is probably what you should be doing. The problem is, most people are in the rat race, living 5 inches in front of their face with no time to pursue what they were born to do. That is the problem, and the solution is to develop enough passive income to replace your working income so you can quit your job and be free to live your life the way you were created to. That is the solution, and this podcast will show you how. What's up, guys? Welcome to another awesome episode of Cashflow Dad Life. I'm your host, Ryan Ank, and today we're going to be talking about an awesome, awesome strategy called debt hacking with real estate. It's what I call debt hacking with real estate. Now, if you know anyone that's in debt, if you're in debt, share this episode with them because it will really help them put things into perspective. So many people need to know this, and so many people don't know this. So if you get a lot of value out of this episode, please share it with someone else that can benefit from it. All right. So just to tell you where my mind is, I was thinking about just yesterday, I had to go to this parent-teacher conference. And I was thinking in my head about how much bullcrap is out there as far as systems that we still subscribe to, ways of life that we subscribe to, ways of thinking that we still subscribe to that just don't make any sense. Some of them never made sense in the first place, and some of them definitely don't make sense in this day and age. And I was thinking this because for some reason, for the past 5 years of my kids being at this school, which we love the school, by the way, I just don't agree with the structural educational systems here in the United States. But for some reason, for the past 5 years, I was able to weasel out of going to these parent-teacher conferences. I'm not sure what I did in the past, but I'd like to review it and go back to it so I can implement that strategy again. But this year, I ended up getting suckered into going to these parent-teacher conferences. Like, and with a bunch of kids, it was a couple hours long. And my wife told me, you know, make sure that you understand everything that the teacher's saying. You know, a lot of people are taking notes and you know, just so you know what the expectations are of the school year and what we have to do. And I'm sitting here, and I go and sit in the back of the class. And there's parents in the front that have notepads, and they're taking vigorous notes at this beginning of the year parent-teacher conference. And I'm listening to the first 5 minutes of this teacher, and she is saying nothing that I would ever want to take a note for. And at that point, I decided I'm not going to pay attention for the rest of the time. It was like the good old days back in grade school where if the first 5 minutes didn't engage me, I was like, all right, if this doesn't apply to me 15 minutes from now, it doesn't affect my life, I'm going to zone out and think about soccer or football or whatever else, you know. So I can tell you, and I'm not ashamed to say this, I didn't pay attention at all during this parent-teacher conference because I'm sitting here thinking, if my son's grade, who's in fifth grade, or I've got one in second grade, and I've got another one in seventh grade, if their grade and their success in life depends on me paying attention in a parent-teacher conference and me taking notes in a parent-teacher conference, then there is something fundamentally flawed and something fundamentally wrong with the system. And what's worse than that, and I know I'm the minority here, maybe I'm not, maybe you guys agree with me, but homework is absolute bullshit. Why do kids, after 6 hours being in a classroom a day, why do they come home with more to do at home? What is the point of that? I understand math. I understand you got to practice math. But even then, you could probably practice it in school. To put in perspective, I took this class one time on creative financing. It was 1.5 hours. And this class, 1.5 hours, changed my life to where I could basically, I learned a skill that would allow me to create wealth and create money at will. And I'm going to show you guys just how powerful this is later on in this podcast. But that was 1.5 hours. Now, our kids are in school an entire day for 6 hours. That's 30 hours a week. You can't tell me that you can't teach that kid life-changing fundamentals in 30 hours per week, and then they've got to come home and do it? I'm not a big fan of Finland or Iceland or Switzerland or wherever it is where I'm not a big fan of their government system. their politics, but they do have something right with education. I think it's like the number one highest test scores in the world. They all speak like three different languages, and they only have like 30 minutes to an hour of actual classroom time per day. The rest is on the playground playing and learning through playing and stuff like that. At any rate, that's an irrelevant rant. Where I'm going with this is we've got this system set up, and it's broken fundamentally in my opinion, where these kids are going to 30 hours of education per week, and then after they're done, after 12th grade, we tell them, all right, if you really want to be successful in life, you've got to go to college and get a degree. And this degree will get you a job that pays you, which isn't entirely true, right? So I got a degree. Mine was in theology and economics. And I taught religion for a couple years and coached soccer. And then I did nothing with the degree after that. My wife got a degree as a nurse, which was a good investment. But still, what she was making, what I was making combined was just not enough to pay the bills. So the average American, and we were about average, but the average American graduates with about $30,000 of college debt. What that translates to is about $280 per month in monthly payments. So right out the gate, when you're starting in life, you're starting at a disadvantage because not only do you have not a high paying job, you've got a lower under $50,000 job, but you've also got to spend a good chunk of that paying off that education, that debt. And not only that, but the average American has about $15,000 of credit card debt. Now, a lot of people, you know, they'll talk bad about the American consumer and that, you know, that they live beyond their means. That's not entirely true. And it wasn't entirely true for my family and probably not your family either. But we wouldn't live beyond our means. We weren't going out to these extravagant restaurants and whatnot. But at the end of the day, it used to be that one spouse could work and adequately provide for the family. But now our debt structures are so high that you have to have two people providing for the family. And even that isn't enough. So sometimes you have to use credit card debt just to get by. We had to use it just to pay for gas and to pay the grocery bills and to pay medical bills for the kids. So we had credit card debt as well. So altogether, you're looking at, if you only have college debt and credit card debt, now there's other debt as well that's out there, you're looking at the average American right out of college paying $472 per month in debt. Now that may be up or down from where you are, but it's about where we were. We were actually more like $500 per month just in paying down debt. Okay, so there are two things you can do with this problem. And you could say, all right, this debt is a huge problem. What do I do? And you could go, what we did is I was just looking for different ways to get out of debt. I read Mary Hunt's book. It was like Debt Proof Your Marriage. It's a really great book. And then I got into Dave Ramsey about debt. But the problem was not that what they're teaching is bad. Actually, I really love both Mary Hunt and Dave Ramsey and how they teach about getting out of debt. The problem is if you're only focused on getting out of debt, then you're developing this scarcity mindset. So I could, and in every marriage, there's a saver and there's a spender. That's typically the way it is. That one of the spouse wants to save the money, the other is just spending at an unstoppable force, at an unstoppable rate. And my wife was a spender and I was a saver. And this was causing marital issues because if she so much as bought M&Ms at the store for the kids, then I would go ballistic because we couldn't afford that because we needed that extra $2 to put towards our debt, to chunk that down and pay it off as soon as possible. And then I would take all of our stuff and I'd have these garage sales. And what ended up happening is I realized that I was living in such a scarcity mindset where I was making my wife cut coupons, where we always felt like what we had was never enough, where I was selling our stuff in a garage sale and we were still poor. We weren't really accelerating this debt pay down. So there is another alternative to this. And that's basically to raise your income level. And a lot of people are like, well, that requires me to work more. Well, no, you can actually debt hack with real estate. Basically, if you are able to acquire a cash flowing real estate asset, not only can you do it in a way that will cover your monthly debt, but you can do it in a way that grows your net worth every single month and provides you additional cash on top of that. So in order to understand how that works, you need to understand the difference between good debt and bad debt. The problem is that a lot of people, because they have such pain and debt, they just think all debt equals bad. Well, really, there's bad debt, there's neutral debt, and there's good debt. And obviously, you want to be on the good debt side. Here's an example of what bad debt is. Bad debt is what poor people get. They basically use a credit card to buy something that they don't need because they don't have the money for it and they just want it, in which case it makes their bank account go down. So, for example, I had a buddy in college that sent me a picture. It was like a group of buddies, and this one buddy sent us a picture, and he was like, "Hey, look at my new investment." It was a picture of a samurai sword that he bought on eBay with his new credit card. And I was like, that is not an investment. That samurai sword is not going to produce you any cash, right? That samurai sword, it cost you $300. You didn't have the $300, so you put it on a credit card that's going to cost you 15% interest. So you're not only paying that $300, but you're paying more than that because you're paying the 15% interest on that credit card. And so that is what poor people do, is that they acquire unnecessary things, and that makes their bank account go down, and they use credit card debt in order to do that. That is how you get crushed by debt. There's neutral debt as well. Education is one of those things that's neutral debt. It could be good or it could be bad. If you invested in your college education, and with that education, you were able to make over six figures a year and pay that debt down really fast, like in the first year or the second year, then that is probably good debt. But if you invested a lot of money in your college education, you're doing nothing with your degree, guess what? Now that is bad debt. Okay, that's something that you spent money on that you aren't even using to get your to grow your bank account, right? And so there's a lot of courses out there in different sites, especially in real estate, where you can actually, if you pay the money today, you will get that back in a month from now. You know, that's what that creative financing course was for me when I first started with real estate, and I took that one course. I immediately got that money back because that was a good investment, okay? All right, so good debt is what rich people use. That's basically where they use other people's money. You've heard of the term OPM, and they get a regular loan structure where you're paying every month a certain amount to pay the loan down and a certain amount to interest because the person who's giving the loan wants to make the interest. That's how they make their money. And you use that loan, that debt, to buy real estate, a cash flowing asset. Now, a cash flowing asset is something where after you've paid all the expenses, you're actually making money. And when you do that, not only it grows your net worth, but it grows your bank account. So let me explain how it worked in my situation. So I had about $500 worth of debt that I was trying to pay down. That was between college debt and credit card debt. Instead of going the Dave Ramsey way and making my wife cut coupons and counting the amount of toilet paper that I use to wipe to try to stretch everything that I have, instead of living that scarcity mindset, I could go out and say, all right, I'm going to create money out of nothing. I'm going to create a cash flowing asset. So what I did is I lined up credit lines. And at the time I actually had a home equity line as well. And then I learned creative financing. So I learned how to make the owner of a house become the bank to me. So I didn't need to go to the bank for the financing. So utilizing all of this together was other people's money, right? I didn't use any of my own cash. And what I did is I went and found a piece of real estate that was undervalued. Well, after all was said and done, this piece of real estate cost $240,000. I bought it with other people's money. It was really worth $265,000, but I got it at a deal. So it was $240,000, and it cash flowed $750 a month. All right, so if you can follow me on the math on this, that means that after I was done paying off other people, I was done paying down the loan, after I was done with the insurance, after I was done paying the taxes and all the utilities and everything else, I was making $750 a month with this asset. So $750 a month, I immediately took $500 of that and put it towards my debt. So now my monthly, not only was my monthly debt covered, but I was making $250 a month. Now here's where it gets incredible. This is why real estate creates so many millionaires. And the difference between rich people and poor people is that rich people acquire debts and they get other people to pay them down. And that is what a renter is called. You know, someone who basically pays down your debt on something. So I had a renter in this first piece of real estate, and every month that he would pay the rent, my mortgage would, the first month got paid down. Let's see, let me take out my amortization calculator. The first month, my mortgage got paid down by, let me pull this up. Okay, got paid down by $346. So my net worth was growing that month. It grew by $346. So not only was I covering my debt of $500, but making $250 in cash flow that I could use to spend, but I also was making $346 in getting that loan paid down. Now, the way that a loan works, a standard amortization, is that you have a principal and you have interest. The principal is what the loan is being paid down on, and the interest is what the actual person giving the loan is making by lending you that money. So the first month, I was paying $346 in principal and $1,200 in interest. So if you can follow me on this, every single month, your principal payment is what you're paying per month is more. So every month your net worth is not only growing, but it grows by more. So just to give you an example of this loan, the first month the renter paid $346 towards my net worth. The next month was $348. The next month $349. The next month $351. Couple years from now, it's gonna be $710 per month. So that principal payment just keeps on increasing as the interest keeps on decreasing every single month. So after 25 years, this was a 25-year loan, I had made over $525,000 plus the increased value of the house. This house is now worth over $300,000 and I got it for $240,000. So just so we're clear, not only did I not use any of my own money to buy this asset, but this asset completely covered all of my monthly debts, but also gave me $250 a month, but also grew my net worth to over $500,000 over the course of 25 years, okay? Plus it's increased value. So that is why the world's millionaires all own real estate, because it really would only take me buying four of those cash flowing assets to become a millionaire after 25 years. But really, it doesn't even take as long as that. Once you know how to buy real estate with other people's money, you can do it over and over and over and over again. There is no limit. So you can very quickly not only get out of debt, but use that debt and get renters to basically accelerate your net worth really fast. Okay, so that's it, guys. I mean, and you compare that to a 401k. You know, if you're going to put $300 a month into a 401k at 7% interest, which is standard, after 25 years, you're going to have $196,000. That's how much your net worth will have increased. But if you purchase a cash flowing asset and get other people to pay it down, your net worth is going to be over $525,000 plus whatever the increased value of the real estate is. All right, so that just shows you how powerful real estate is. So hopefully you guys got a lot out of this. Not all debt is created equal. You have good debt and you have bad debt, but if you are able to use good debt to buy a cash flowing asset, that is the smartest thing you could do to get out the rat race. So that you don't, if you've got debt right now and you're wondering, do I pay this off or do I invest in real estate? You invest in real estate because not only will you grow your net worth and make a little extra money per month, but you can use some of that cash flow to cover all your other debt as well and pay it down. So at the end of the day, I went from making my wife cut coupons, having marital arguments and fights, talking, constantly trying to figure out, you know, things to sell around my house, to just being smart about it and without using any of my own money, acquiring an asset that paid off my monthly payments of debt and provided an extra cash flow and grew my net worth and my retirement at the same time. And you guys can do the same thing too. Hope you found this helpful. Please share this episode for anybody who needs or is struggling with debt, because this will definitely help them at least get their mind in the right direction of creating an abundance instead of scarcity and finding out ways to create income to pay off the debt instead of just cutting coupons every single month to live more scarcely. All right, guys, take care. Boom! Thanks for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. You're going to want to listen to every episode as soon as it comes out, because each episode has in it an idea or a strategy that could literally change your life. And listen, don't miss out on the free investor tools that I have for you on my website, cashflowdadlife.com. So go to cashflowdadlife.com and get your free swag. And listen, hit me up if you want to talk about how we can get you out of the rat race as soon as possible. Until next time, my name is Ryan Anke, and this was Cashflow Dad Life.